Blog Talk Radio.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The chase for the NASCAR Spring Cup returns October 21st through 23rd. Call 1-877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
Hi, I'm Cameron Haley, driver number 13, Matei Tundra for Thor Sport Racing and the Camping World Truck Series. You're listening to the Pit Stop Radio with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, in your Apple Podcast.
Live from Talladega, I'm Tim Despain, alongside my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Stephen's a little bit late joining us right now. I'm pretty sure Anne-Marie got him rattling some pots and pans and stuff, but let's go ahead and bring on the official reverend of the Pit Stop, Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson, Mr. Reverend Joe.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud?
Not too bad, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear you're feeling better.
Little by little, I'm getting there. There's up and down days, you know, that goes. But
yes, sir.
Things are going okay. So,
that's awesome,
anyway,
bud. Glad to hear.
Let's pray, and then I can tell you a little bit of a quick summary of Vegas.
Yes, sir.
All right, Lord, we come before you, and first of all, we ask your blessings and protections on all those who went through that terrible storm and lost so much, and those that may still be stuck in places that nobody's even gotten to yet. So be with them, be with their families, be with our military all over the world, be with their families, and then be with our racers and our racing fans who we love so much, and we're always so glad to be able to have the freedom here in this country to be able to go play and race and do the things we love to do. So be with us all, and we thank you so much for the sacrifice that your son gave so that we would have freedom to get to heaven. So we thank you for all that in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Jim.
Oh.
from Joe as always. Great invocation. Let us know about Vegas, bud. Tell it.
Vegas, I think I mentioned something to you last week, but it was a lot of fun, and we got to talk to an awful lot of people who, behind-the-scenes people, crew members, crew chiefs, people that just don't get all that hype and recognition that they well deserve. Good group of people in the truck series this year. Exciting race. For those of you that didn't catch it on TV, boy, they fought every moment of that race, and things changed by the moment. It was really neat. Jeff Motley and his crew there in the media center and such do a fantastic job. A typical Bruton Smith track. There's always something going on. There's always excitement, and they're always spotless. It's not that the other tracks aren't, but, boy, when you go to a Bruton Smith track, you know you're at a Bruton Smith track. And it just was great. Ran into our good friend Rob Street, who's a listener to the show, and had some fun chatting with him and giving him a hard time. But all in all, it was an amazing weekend.
That's awesome, Rip. Yeah, I was going to ask you about Rob. Did you get in that little milk crate where you can stand up on it again? I don't really want to dog him out that bad, but.
Well, I didn't. We didn't take any pictures together this time. he shoots pictures of me and Miss Betty whenever he gets a chance, but or whoever else I may be talking to. But we didn't pick on him for being so short. He might be. I don't want to give him a complex. I don't want to give him a complex. He's a good guy, and he loves coming out and shooting the races. So it was good to see him and so many other photographers. And then, you know, there were a couple of people who had passed away since the last time I saw him. And, you know, others came to me and told me, you know, there were a couple of them were photographers of less note, I should say, but still great photographers. And it was sad to hear of their passing, but knowing their faith, it was enjoyable to know that we'll see them again, you know.
Yes, sir. Amen, Reverend. And just to throw out there, if Rob is listening, Rob, I was just carrying on. And Reverend Joe, you know, like you said, Rob Street Photography, everybody follow him on Facebook. He does an awesome job with pictures.
Oh, yes, he does. And he puts together programs for other people and a page for them. And I've got to get together a bunch of my pictures from the old days and more recently and send them to him. He's going to put together a page for me. He does some great work, and he does it pretty inexpensively. He's gotten to meet some great people along the way doing that, and it's interesting. And he's a neat, neat guy. He's taller than he is. He's much taller inside.
Yes, sir. That's right, Reverend. Yes, sir. And maybe one day I will get to meet Rob. Maybe one day I will get to meet you too. And Reverend, like I said, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule every week to come on and do the invocation. And you know, go ahead and let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, Reverend.
Yep, our website is ontrackwithjesus.org. Our email address is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com, and social media. You can find me on Facebook at Rev Joe Bubico. If somebody out there could call me up, and the number is 951-232-7630. Someone could call me up one of these days and explain to me how to use Instagram and how to use Twitter. I could get there too. I've got accounts there, but I can't figure out how to post to them. And I finally got my problem with posting the scripture straightened out yesterday morning, because I use a program that got updated. You know, they update them during the night when you're sleeping, and I woke up the next morning and it wouldn't work. I could read it and use it, but I couldn't post with it. But finally figured that out yesterday by accident, or the day before. So I feel like I'm back on 2 feet anyway.
Yes, sir. That sounds good, Rev. Yeah, you were definitely back on 2 feet. And just a sort of comment there on what you said about update. It seems like every time something updated, it screws something else up, don't it?
Well, yeah, it moves it to where the experts that do this stuff think is a better spot for it. But it's there. I learned a long time ago, I've got a very good friend who writes computer code, and they think totally different than the rest of us do. We think in words, they think in numbers, and it's just a whole different way of looking at it, you know?
Yeah, it is, Reverend. And Reverend, again, thank you very much for being the official Reverend of the Pit Stop with Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson. Tell Miss Betty we said hello, and thank you for everything that you do for the sport, Reverend.
We will do that. God bless you guys. Have a good week.
God bless you too, Reverend. Talk to you next Tuesday, bud.
All righty.
All right, see you, bud. That's a good friend, Reverend Joe, from out there on the West Coast, and I finally seen my good friend Stephen Wilson here. Let's bring Stephen into the pit stop. Well, he's part of it. Stephen, where you been? So, wait a minute, where's my button? Let me get Stephen.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen, I made a comment while I go to Reverend Joe A.M. Probably heard you rattling pots and pans. Is that where you been?
No, I'm running a few minutes behind tonight.
No problem, bud. No problem. I figured you had something going on. But, yeah, we don't have a guest tonight, so we're going to cover everything out of Charlotte. Stephen, have you heard any breaking news? I hadn't had time to look at my emails or anything. Is any breaking stuff out of NASCAR?
Yesterday out of Richard Childress Racing, where a lot of people didn't think that Ryan Newman was going to return back next year, just given the fact that...
Hold on a minute, bud. Here we go. It's my 1960 you always talk about. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, so a lot of people didn't think that Ryan Newman was going to return back. Of the race in 2017, just with the opportunity of possibility of Ty Dillon moving up into at number 31 or something on that side. However, Rich Jones Racing and Ryan Newman both announced that they had extended out their relationship and were going to be together in 2017 also. They say it's a multi-year agreement with them, which will extend out beyond next year, but no definitive numbers were released. However, it now puts in question what exactly happens to Ty Dillon in that number 3 car in the Xfinity Series. Which Childress Racing is running, with 3 cars currently, with the potential that you can add 4 cars. However, no word has come out exactly what is going to happen with him in 2017. He's been running a little bit part-time with Rich Children Racing affiliate Circle Sport and Levine Family Racing in select races over 2016 already. So if it's not a Richard Church Racing car wanting to add a 4th car to their stable, it may be something along the lines over there with Circle Sport, Levine Family Racing, adding a 2nd car to their deal with engineering and program support from RCR and the engines and Chevrolet in 2017. But this is all pretty much speculation at this point. Things that would potentially happen between now and Daytona in February.
Right. And, Stephen, you and I, we've talked about this before, about what we're going to bring up to do. And, you and I talked about that RCR needs to really keep Ryan Newman as far as that veteran status, which is a great asset to RCR. And I'm glad that they did that. And what's your thoughts on that, Stephen, about them keeping Ryan Newman, which is a veteran driver? He's been around for a while and has a lot of good stuff to share with the young driver.
Yeah, Ryan Emmett, for what most people don't know about him, he's not just a race car driver. He's actually a very well-educated race car driver with a degree from Purdue University in mechanical engineering. So he's not just your atypical run-of-the-mill race car driver that gets in the car and goes out onto the racetrack and drives the car. He's a guy that understands the engineering aspect of this, how to make the cars better, not only for him, but everybody over at RCR. And that's not to say that they don't have very talented people working within their shop, because they do. They all do. But when you can get somebody like Ryan Newman in a car that's a driver that also understands the mechanical and engineering aspect of these cars, how to make them better, I think it just improves your program overall. You know, Richard Childress Racing obviously is a team that needs that right now. You know, we've seen Richard Childress Racing in years past dominate, just like we have with Roush Fenway Racing. Both of those teams are badly in need of, you know, drivers and you know, crew that can continue making themselves better. You know, they have had some good runs together. Ryan Newman is a multi-time winner. He finished second in the championship at Homestead, Miami, just a couple of years ago. So, you know, he's a driver that can still put together good finishes. And, you know, this year already, they already have, they have 11 top five finishes, you know, over his and 39 top tens over his, you know, nearly 4 years with the team. So, I mean, it's not like he's, you know, running around at the back of the pack. He's still able to put together good finishes, and I think it just makes Richard Childress Racing, especially with the younger drivers like Austin Dillon, Ty Dillon, coming through and, you know, makes them better as a whole, especially when, you know, everybody can work together on these programs.
Yeah, exactly, Steven. And just to bring up, I think we had another breaking news deal there. You brought up Levine Family Racing. Didn't they sign, I don't want to put you on the spot because I, you know, you and I haven't talked. Didn't they sign Todd Parrott to a deal to crew chief Michael McDowell?
Yes, they did. He's going to take over as full-time crew chief over there at Circus Park Levine Family Racing. This week for Michael McDowell. You know, he won the 1999 championship with Dale Jarrett. So this is a guy that, you know, has a lot of talent behind him, a lot of years of experience. So to bring somebody in like Todd and put him on top of the pit box, I think that it'll work well for them. It's bolstering their organization as a whole as they try and get better finishes. And I think you saw that this past weekend at Charlotte, where Michael McDowell had his career best finish in the Sprint Cup Series in the Bank of America 500. So, you know, those are things that look like are immediately already starting to take hold over there. Todd, a guy that can work the pit strategy just as well as anybody else on pit road, being around for so long, and I think it's good for that organization, especially this year. Not only on top of that, as I mentioned before, you know, they do have a technical alliance partnership with Richard Childress Racing for their cars and motors and all that they do over there in that race shop.
Yeah. And, Stephen, you brought up Charlotte. Let's go ahead and get everything started. And so, okay, will you all go ahead and start off with the NASCAR Xfinity Series, race number 29, the 35th annual. Hold on, man. I'm trying to find everything here. Sorry about that. The 35th annual Drive for the Cure 300 at Charlotte Motor Speedway on a 1.5 mile pave over there. 200 laps, 300 miles. Time of the race was 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 23 seconds. The average speed was 143.56 miles per hour. Margin of victory for Mr. Joey Logano in the PP&G Ford for Roger Penske there was 0.462 seconds. As I mentioned, Joey finished P1, Elliott Sadler P2, Daniel Suarez P3, Kyle Larson P4, Eric Jones, P5. Your sixth place finisher, Justin Allgaier. Seventh place finisher, Kevin Harvick, driving the number 88 Hunt Brothers Pizza Chevrolet there for Dale Earnhardt Jr. Matt Tift finished eighth. Brad Keselowski ninth. And ran out your top 10 was Ryan Seed. Let's listen to a little bit of Stephen about what Joey Logano had to say in the media center there at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Okay, if we could have your attention, please. We are now joined by our winners of the 35th annual Drive for the Cure 300 here at Charlotte Motor Speedway, Joey Logano, Brian Wilson and Mike Nelson. So, gentlemen, congratulations. This is Joey's 27th win in the NASCAR Xfinity Series and second in 2016. So, Joey, if you could just open up with some comments about your race tonight.
Yeah, what a fun night for sure. Good recovery from the first part of my day. So I feel a lot better than I did, I don't know, about 3 or 4 hours ago when I tried to knock down the wall. So feel better now. Obviously, a great PBG Mustang. You know, Brian Wilson put together a great team from the kind of picking and choosing a bunch of people from the race shop, and it's a lot of fun because you got guys that have been racing for years, and some was their first race this weekend. So it's a fun mix to be a part of and to come out here and race with nothing to lose. And, you know, we had a good car, maybe not the best car out there, but we had a good enough car that we can make something happen with. And we stayed on a lead lap on that long run, and Pickery did their job by keeping us in position to make an awesome restart at the end and, you know, kind of an all-or-nothing move and be able to, you know, get the lead and ultimately hold them off to get the checkered flag. So, you know, a lot of fun to be able to do that, and like I said, a lot better way to end the day than the way it started.
Okay, if you have a question for Joey or Crew Chief Brian Wilson or Vice President of Operations Mike Nelson, please raise your hand and we will get a microphone to you. Okay, we'll start up here in the front.
Zach Attan's very French touch. Just mentally and physically, running 800 miles in one day, you know, the first race was difficult, had some troubles, but mentally and physically, what was it like today out there on the track?
I'm okay. I didn't run the full 800 miles. I sat in the garage for about 100, I think. So my neck feels it from knocking down the wall. But besides that, I feel good. My arms are in good shape. You know, I tried to prepare myself the best I can for today, knowing what I had ahead of me. And I feel good. You know, I feel like car drove good. If the car was that bad, I'd have a hard time trying to keep up with it. But you know, I think trying to do this at Dover last week would have been very challenging. After a cup race at Dover, usually you're pretty tired. But here at a mile and a half, a little bit bigger racetrack, you have a little bit of straightaways to, you know, relax for a little bit. You know, I think gives your body enough to get through it. Mentally, I'm shot. I've had a long enough day that I'm kind of used up. But, you know, overall, I got everything I had to get out of it. So.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Bob.
Joe, you talked about kind of a mentally long day. I was curious during the cup race how your emotions were in the sense of, you know, I talked to Harvick and he said he went to sleep and he woke up and he had gained about 20 points on Ace. you were actually out there. I mean, did you feel better at the end of the cup race than you did while you were sitting in the garage?
Yeah, I feel better about it. You know, my team did a good job fighting to get back out there, and I think we gained 2 points by doing that, and that could be the difference when it's all said and done. So did a good job getting back out there, and really we were, I think, 3 or 4 laps from being able to pass about 4 cars, which would have been nice. You know, right now I think we're 6 points out. I think that's what I was told before I started this race. And, you know, we're going to quite possibly our best racetrack. I think Charlotte and Kansas are our 2 best racetracks. So I felt very confident going into this round, and I had a very good car today. So I'm looking forward to getting to Kansas and seeing what we got and seeing if we can break through to get a win. But if not, a solid point today. I think we can manage with what we got, but we can't afford to make any mistakes. And with Talladega coming up, and it was a for sure unknown. you never know what's going to happen. So if we can break through and get a win, we'll feel a lot better.
Steven, that was Joey Logano there in the Medicine at Charlotte Motor Speedway after his win there. But, you know, he's a cup driver there. And that was the cutoff race for the NASCAR Xfinity Series. The points have been reseeded. Do you have that information, Bud?
Yeah, so, you know, as Charlotte, we got out of Charlotte. It was the first round there for the NASCAR Xfinity Series in their first chase. You know, unfortunately, tied down in Brendan Poole, Ryan Sieg, and Brandon Jones, you know, were 4 drivers that dropped out going into this round of 8 starting this week at Kansas. And going back and who's leading the points. Everybody's at 3,000 points currently, seeded out with Suarez, Sadler, Allgaier, Eric Jones, Gone, Reed, Darryl Wallace Jr., and Blake Cook. They just scraped by to get in on that based on the misfortunes of Ty Dillon in that Xfinity Series race. So you've got a lot of drivers sitting up in there, especially when you look at Daniel Suarez and Eric Jones, which I picked Eric Jones this year to take home the championship. But, you know, he's another driver that just barely squeaked by. He had a problem at Dover. It put him way, way behind. He was at one point in the cutoff, which would have put Ty Dillon in. But, you know, when Ty Dillon had the MARD issues out there in that race, Eric Jones was able to capitalize and get a good finish out of that, which put him there.
And, Steven, this is the first year that NASCAR has implemented the chase format for the NASCAR Xfinity Series. You know, you and I, we talked about this in the offseason. I think it's really made for some good racing, don't you, Bud?
Yeah, I think one thing that we've had the conversation with several different drivers already this year in the NASCAR Xfinity Series where, you know, we're seeing more full-time drivers and teams entering into that series because everybody has a chance. You take a look at Ryan Sieg, underfunded family operation there, and he was able to make it into the round of 12 just based on being very consistent over the year. You got Blake Cook, another team that, you know, they're in their first year in NASCAR Xfinity Series with Blake Cook and Colin Racing. You know, they've got a technical alliance with Richard Childress Racing their own selves, but you've got drivers like Ty Dillon, Brendan Poole, and Brandon Jones that those three drivers, you would have expected them to be up there. And you've got drivers like Ryan Reed and Darryl Wallace Jr. who, with Ross Fenway Racing, you know, they're the defending, Ross Fenway Racing is the defending, you know, champion in the series with Chris Buescher last year. So I think, you know, we've got a good, solid, you know, good solid top eight. You've got two from JR Motorsports. JGR is represented in there. Rich Childress represented Ross Fenway Racing and Collard Racing. You know, there's a well-rounded group of drivers in there. And really, when you go into places and you can lock yourself in with a race win, you know, that really does help out, too, some of these teams that not necessarily are consistent week in and week out, but it gives them the opportunity to be more apt to move on with this style of chase racing that we have now implemented in the Xfinity Series as well as the Camping World Truck Series, which won't be back in action until they come to you here in Talladega next weekend or a weekend after that.
Yeah, that's right, Steven. And I will agree. You know, you and I, like I said earlier, you know, you and I talked about that, and this is the first year that they implemented, and I think they've done a great job. But Steven, let's take a little quick break. We're gonna take a little quick break. We're live from Dega Nation. I'm Tim Despain, and alongside my good friend and CEO of Speedway Digest.com, Mr. Steven Wilson. We will be back shortly.
Let this old soul This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The chase for the NASCAR Spring Cup returns October 21st through 23rd. Call 1-877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
Live from Talladega, I'm Tim Spain, alongside my good friend and CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Stephen Wilson. Stephen, we're in the chase, bud. The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series is coming down to the wire.
Yeah, I mean, it really is at this point. We've got six races left in this season before we're, you know, before we're done after this week. So, you know, we're almost halfway through at this point, and drivers are really going to have to be up on top of the wheel. They're going to have to figure out what they're going to do, especially you've got Kansas this weekend and then they're coming to Talladega, which is the great equalizer and the great unknown for a lot of these drivers. But you would have thought the same thing this past weekend in Charlotte, too. 11 out of the 12 chase drivers had some kind of incident out there. A nasty rift between Austin Dillon and Chase Elliott out there, putting them outside of the cutoff line. Joey Logano into the wall multiple times with tire failures. Kevin Harvick dead last at this point with an oil pump bearing that went out early on in the race. And, you know, those are just the four drivers there at the bottom that had problems. The only one was your eventual race winner that came through clean and didn't have a problem all day long was Jimmy Johnson out there at Charlotte Motor Speedway in the Bank of America 500 for a 78th NASCAR Sprint Cup Series win and his third victory here in 2016. It's also his eighth victory out there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Matt Kenseth, he finished second out there. Casey Kane finished third. Chris Buescher was the highest finishing rookie of the race in 16th. After both the other two rookies had an issue, Chase Elliott, as I just mentioned, in a vicious wreck there with Austin Dillon. Ryan Blaney also was tied up into that and also had other issues throughout the day. So, you know, you've got a lot of things that happened this past weekend in Charlotte. A lot of drivers that are going to have to go into Kansas out there. Joe Logano was talking about it earlier. He did win. You know, he won all three rounds in 2015, Charlotte, Kansas, and Talladega. So, you know, he's going to have to be he's way down there at the bottom. And Kevin Harvick yet again gets put in that situation like we saw in 2015 at Dover Week. He had to either win or he wasn't going to advance. And it looks like, you know, if he can't get a win out there at Kansas, he's going to have to come into Talladega and have that same kind of run that he had at Dover in 2015 and get that win to be able to move on.
Yeah, you're right, Stephen. And just to touch a little bit on what you talked about the tire problems, to sort of let all of our listeners know, I don't know if it was a Goodyear problem, but the track was green. And, you know, whenever the track's green, the grip's a little bit different. And some of the tires, especially the 22, the 88, I think the 88 had the tire problem first, and the 22, and I think the 18 also had a tire problem. But can you let everybody know about the green track and the tire separation? I think they were saying that it was an air pressure issue, Stephen. Am I correct?
There were drivers, Steve Engineering, in the Goodyear rep for the NASCAR Strength Cup Series. He did say that there was some tire failure with the treads actually separating from themselves, as well as 1888. They felt like that those were both cars were running under pressure and caused a tire failure on that. So you know there was a different setting, as different strategies throughout the day. Obviously, with the green racetrack, which had been 2 days of rain, and nobody had been on that track since that competition caution didn't come out of the lap around lap 24. Well, it came out at lap 24 due to Alex Bowman blowing that tire. Goodyear Engineering did say that that was due to the fact that it was running under pressure. So, you know, those tires at Charlotte, you know, Goodyear, NASCAR, everybody has warned the teams to stop running them on such low air pressure because you risk these types of incidents. And, you know, it was a lot, the weather was a little bit cooler on Sunday. I'm sure that they were also setting those cars up for nighttime Saturday night racing, but unfortunately Hurricane Matthew had a little bit to say about why we didn't race on Saturday night. So, you know, they a lot of cars, I think, had a lot of issues, not only because going from that nighttime race to the daytime racing, and the tire pressures, obviously, under cooler temperatures, you're going to want to start them just a little bit lower than you normally would because the heat builds up into them, and especially with the midday sun starting to come out, they were setting those cars up the best that they could to run to those first pit stops, really.
Yeah, Stephen, you bring up a good point. Just let all of our listeners know, you know, just like you said, everybody was set up for a night race. And they didn't have that much practice. You know, they qualified and everything. But Stephen, the problem that they had. Did you ever hear exactly what happened? Was it the oil pressure sensor that shut everything down, or what did it? Because I know they said it wasn't a battery. Was it that oil pressure sensor that shut everything down, the reason Kevin Harvick lost power, or have you heard anything?
The team did, you know, they originally tried to take this thing back to the garage and reset the ECU in the car, thinking that it was some kind of electrical problem or something with the ECU, because they could get it fired a couple of different times. But during those times that they did get it fired, they were getting smoke out of the exhaust, as well as having the same issues over and over again. The team finally did diagnose this as a failed oil pump bearing into it that lowered the oil in the motor and basically caused it to fail.
Okay, so that was a problem. And Stephen, also, can you let our listeners know exactly why they had to push the four car behind pit wall? They could not plug the computer up to the ECU to figure out the problem on pit road. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but the way the rule book reads, if they want to plug that computer into that ECU, they have to be in the garage or behind pit wall, correct?
Right. The way that the Holley and ECUs work, as well as the McLaren ECUs that are in these cars that replace the carburetor, they are allowed to work on these during the race, but in order to do so, they cannot do it out on pit road. They have to take it behind the wall. And just like in your normal car, if you were to take a car off to AutoZone or Advanced Auto Parts or NAPA or somewhere like that, and they can plug a code reader into it, read the codes off of it, and figure and diagnose the problem, as well as resetting the ECU in these cars. And all of this work has to be done behind the wall or in the garage. And this is really just a safety measure, because you have a lot of team members that are working on this car at one time. You also have the engine and the engine builders that are working on to this, you know, the electronics engineers, everybody that's really working on this. And, you know, as a safety aspect, you don't want all of these people standing out on pit road with a laptop and code reader connected into your car. You know, NASCAR has tried to minimize people going across the wall for safety measures over the last couple of years, and this is just another safety measure, really, is what a lot of this comes down to, is just making sure that everybody is safe, especially when you have that amount of people working on a car to diagnose an issue such as that.
Yes, Dan, I've been sort of like, this distracted driving stuff. Everybody walking around, especially some of these goofballs that's down there on pit road, sometimes walking around texting, and, you know, you got the cars coming in and out, don't know, they're not watching where in the hell they're going. I mean, you know, hello?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're in a live pit setting. I mean, there's cars coming in and out, and you should always, you know, even when there's nothing going on, you had to be so very careful about what goes on down there. And I mean, we've seen that, you know, time and time again about people down there. We saw it at Bristol earlier this year, or last year at Bristol. That's just one of the number of incidents. And, you know, you have to just be so careful, even though these teams are probably more aware of what is going on than the average person down on pit road. You know, it's still a dangerous place to be, especially during a hot race such as what is going on.
Exactly. Even I'm going to get on my soapbox. If I get in trouble, I get in trouble. Some of these people don't need to be down there on pit road around all that stuff. Especially, like you said, a hot pit stall, a hot garage. Some of them don't need to be down there. But I'm going to jump back off my soapbox now and get that off my head or off my shoulders, whatever you want to say. And Stephen, let's listen to a little bit about what Jimmy Johnson had to say in medicine at Charlotte Motor Speedway after he won the 57th annual Bank of America 500.
Okay, if we could have your attention, please. We are now joined by team owner Rick Hendrick, owner of Hendrick Motorsports, winners of today's 57th annual Bank of America 500. Mr. Hendrick, congratulations on the great win by the number 48 team. If you could just open up by sharing some comments about today's victory.
Well, this Charlotte's like home for us, but it's been a dry spell. So, we're just glad to see that the white flag and to get the win. All our cars ran good today. Chase had a problem. We hate that. Alex ran good, and Casey finished third. So, guys worked hard, and good to see Jimmy be in the form he's in here in the chase. So we're excited. We're just glad to get another win in the column.
Okay, if you have a question for Mr. Hendrick, please raise your hand. We will get a microphone to you. Okay, we'll start over here with Jeff and then come over to Bob and then up to the front.
Jeff Buck with USA Today. Rick, what's the last few months been like for your team? Because it seemed like you guys were off for a while and then had been showing speed, but yet you couldn't put a race together. I'm sure there was a lot of angst at times, but now it seems like you guys are back. What's been the feeling there?
Well, you know, I can't tell you how many races we were in a position to win. A caution would come out and restart, and we just fumble the ball. And but we've really been working hard through the summer. I think when I was with you guys at Bristol, we were talking about going to the wind tunnel and everybody working together. And usually teams kind of come apart when they're not showing signs of speed, and the guys have never worked this hard together, and it's been paying off. And you're right, we just didn't close the deal. We've had the speed, but we just couldn't finish. So I think today was a good day for us to show a lot of speed, lead a lot of laps. I hate what happened to Chase and Alex with tires and Chase in the wreck, but to see Casey, I think that's the fifth or sixth race he's been in the top 10. So we've got good momentum. I think we're the engine shop, the aero shop, chassis, everybody's been working hard. So you know, it's just, it looked like there for a while we were struggling to run the top 10. So it's, again, I'm proud of the guys of how hard they've worked together, and hopefully we can get Chase back in it and be a threat to finish this thing.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Bob Pocker, ESPN. Rick, I was talking to Jimmy last week because this was his longest winless streak of his career in Cup, and I'm curious if you noticed anything during the last 23 races that you could tell that it was the longest winless streak of his career.
Well, yeah, well, nobody has to remind me that we hadn't won a race. I mean, you guys remind me of that every weekend, and they do on TV. I think we were washed up and should have quit, but, you know, it kind of motivated us. And you know, Jimmy, we just lacked speed through the middle part, early part of the year. And just had to work really hard to gain it back. And you know, nobody ever gave up. And you know, we know how what a champion Jimmy is. And we were good here in the May race. And so, you know, we've been good on the mile and a half, and we've been better than we finished. But this feels good. I know, Jimmy, I've never taken the champagne bath in 30 some years, so this was the first. It was like our first race again.
Go ahead. Next question from Mike.
Mike Neff from frontstretch.com. Congratulations on the win, gentlemen. This is originally for Mr. H, but Chad, if you'd like to chime in on this as well, you can. We get to see you at the track and your public persona. We aren't privy to the behind-the-scenes meetings, and I'm just a little curious, in the middle of the summer when you were in that stretch of doldrums, was there any kind of fist-pounding on the table, motivational-type speech, or does everybody in the organization pretty much know what they need to do and they don't need to be fired up from the top?
Well, we had a lot of meetings. We definitely did. I love meetings. But no, quite honestly, we did have to have a lot of meetings. There wasn't any fist pounding per se. But what we did do was try to get together with all of the heads of state, let's say, right? You know, you've got the crew chiefs, you've got the management group at Hendrick Motorsports, Kenny Francis, and so on and so forth. And what we were trying to do is identify with where our weaknesses were. And once we started to hone in on where we thought we needed to get some gains, we started to allocate the resources to where we needed it. And that's what you've got to do, because when you get into a situation where you're behind a little bit, if you give the people the problem, let them go solve it, usually you get a pretty good answer with the people that we have at Hendrick Motorsports. So it was a good learning curve for us, because I think that as a company we need to expand a little bit. And I think that we have done that. We put in responsibility in some different areas that maybe we hadn't in the past. And I think that all of Hendrick Motorsports is definitely going to feel a lot of responsibility for this victory, which is great for all of us. And I think that they're going to have a sense of pride in knowing that they all contributed.
And just to add to that, we've always been very good teammates, but the way in which all four drivers and crew chiefs and even the engineers on the teams are working together and helping each other, It's spectacular, and that's what it takes. And you know, we've obviously made some great improvements through it, and look forward to what we can do in the future with it.
Okay, if you have questions for race-winning driver Jimmy Johnson, crew chief Chad Knaus, or team owner Mr. Hendrick, please raise your hand. We'll get a microphone to you. Okay, we'll take our next question from Brian, and then just behind him.
Brian Nelson with MRN. For Chad, what has been the impact of not having a regular driver for the 88 on the development and the recovery for Hendrick Motorsports this summer?
Obviously, we all want to have Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the race car, right? He's a fantastic talent. He's a great contributor to the organization. But that being said, honestly, having Jeff Gordon in the car has really opened up our eyes to a different side of Jeff that's helped us. Jeff gives great feedback, as does Alex, and it's been interesting to hear what they say. Kind of like when you hear the same thing over and over and over again, but then somebody else tells you the same thing, your ears kind of perk up a little bit, you know, maybe if...
You're saying you don't listen to what I have to say?
What did he say? But it's really neat. So it's been good to have Jeff in there, and honestly, Alex has done a great job, and quite honestly, Dale has been a huge asset because... As we all know, he is a student of the sport. He watches every lap. He pays attention to everything that we have going on. And he gives us feedback from his perspective of watching on television, listening to what the drivers say, listening to the crew chief's feedback, and helps guide us and direct us in what we've got going on. So quite honestly, although we're a team of four, right now we're really a team of six, which has been really awesome from that standpoint. We've had so much feedback. We've had a great opportunity to take everybody's suggestions and what they're feeling in the car and apply those to the race cars. And I think you've seen that with the five car finishing third today, the 24 running as well as what they did. And man, let's be honest, Alex did great today. So it's been really, really good.
Okay.
And Steve, over Chad Knaus and Mr. Hendrick and Jimmy Johnson there in the mini center at Charlotte after they won the 57th annual Bank of America 500. You know, Stephen, you and I have talked about Hendrick. They've been lacking speed this year. It's like the Gibbs cars, the Penske cars have had a little notch up or half notch up or whatever, but it sort of looks like Hendrick's has found a little something, bud.
Yeah, it seems like that. Well, you know, Jimmy Johnson's won. This is his third win in 2016 already. He's leading the points right now by 5 points as we go into Kansas this weekend. You know, Jimmy Johnson not only plays, is well at driving the car, but he's good at playing the chase game and getting through all the way to Homestead, even though that sometimes you don't always hear about what he does or his on-track performance. He's a driver that's very methodical in the way that he works through the chase, and it always seems like when chase rules are changed that Jimmy Johnson, Chad Knaus, and Hendrick Motorsports, they seem to take a year or two or three to really get back up on top and put Jimmy in those positions that he can get into Homestead and win his, well, this will be his seventh championship, which he does so this year. So, you know, I think it's, you know, just Jimmy's persona in the way that, you know, he's not the one out in front of everything. He doesn't always win every other week like we've seen Kyle Busch do with 8 wins already this year, who's much farther down the points chart at this point. You know, he's not that. I mean, years past, that's what we would be talking about. But I think in the new chase and the new scenarios, that Jimmy Johnson is more methodical in the way that he works through these chases. I think they've finally started to build upon the last 2 or 3 years that they needed to get back and reorganize to put Jimmy and Hendrick Motorsports in the chase picture, you know, especially in 2016.
Yeah, and, you know, Stephen, yeah, you know, Jimmy, you know, he hadn't been real flashy the past couple of years, but he is a 6-time champion. And talking about Hendrick Motorsports, you got Casey Kane, he finished third, you know, just like you mentioned. He's sort of coming along, too, and when they put Alex Bowman in the car to relieve Dale Jr., you know, Alex is doing a great job, too. So Hendrick is probably, you know, they're hitting on something. And, you know, Jimmy Johnson, he's punched his ticket into the round of 8. So, you know, we might see history made this year, Steve. I mean, you know, Jimmy Johnson has, you know, like I mentioned, the 6 championships. And there's only 2 other drivers that have 7, which everybody knows, Richard Petty and late great Dale Earnhardt Sr. Do you think Jimmy might be on a roll to get his 7th this year, bud?
You know, we got a long ways to go until, you know, even though that there's only 6 races left in this year, you know, we still have a long way to go, and a lot of things can happen between now and then. You know, it's got to be of some concern that with Kevin Harvick, I would think an engine problem with them, you know, has to be some type of concern for them. You know, Casey Kane did run well, and obviously Jimmy Johnson won the race. But then you also have Alex Bowman, who, with a tire issue out there, Chase Elliott, who's marred into an accident, not of his own doing. And it really, you know, a lot of the field stacks up, and sometimes things happen on those restarts. But, you know, we still have, like I said, we have 6 races, you know, well, 5 races until we get to Homestead, and really 6 races that are left to compete in 2016. So anything can happen. Granted, he can go into this weekend and he can go into Talladega and not have to be worried about getting to Talladega and be put in one of those situations where he's in a 10 or 12 car accident halfway through the race and is down there at the bottom and doesn't advance. And when you look back at 2015, he wasn't able to advance out of the round of 8 going into a Homestead. So there's a lot of things that can still happen. He's got a good probability of winning at Martinsville here after the lead out of Talladega. He's won there before many times. So I think we have to still be mindful of that fact. There's a lot of racing to go when anything can really happen. Not necessarily that he, like I said, has to worry in this round, but coming up in the next round, which will be Martinsville, Texas, and Phoenix before they head into homestead for the finale.
Definitely, Stephen. I would definitely agree. Stephen, if I can, I want to turn the page. Now, you and I had talked earlier. I've had a lot of people on social media, a lot of friends around Talladega here, ask me this question. Back in, I think it was September 29th, NASCAR updated their rule book, Section 12.10, encumbered race finishes. And I've read it and read it and read it. And I think I got a little bit of understanding about it, but the late, great Bill France Sr. said that he would never take a win from a driver because he wanted the fans to know when they left the track on Sundays, they knew who won the race. But can you explain Rule 12.10 in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series rule book, encumbered race finishes?
Look, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about this when they did change this over. Encumbered race finishes are things that when every driver now in the chase has to go through the list of special goes to the laser inspection station. And these things are very, very accurate down to hundreds of thousands of an inch. So, you know, we're talking very minimal room for error in some of these cases where NASCAR can say that, you know, the ground clearance from the bottom of the rocker panel to the actual ground or the body height, which is inspected in multiple different points across not only the trunk, the hood, the sides. You know, these things are lasered down. And like I said, you know, there's really no tolerance into this. You know, NASCAR also looks at things like weight. They have to meet a weight requirement. 3,750 pounds is typically the minimum weight between 3,700 and 3,750, depending on the size of the driver. Now there are some, little bit of leeway into that because NASCAR takes the account of the weight of the driver in, but every car has to meet a minimum weight based on the rule book. So, you know, you've got things such as that. You get things such as missing lug nuts or not tightened down, and that's just been a object of discussion throughout 2016 too, when we've seen teams only putting two or three lug nuts on to save a tenth of a second here or there. And NASCAR, obviously, they did away with that. They say all five lugs have to be on. They have to be secured. They have to be tightened down, which is why you see when they come to pit road, the first thing that they do is they do a tolerance check on these. Make sure that they have, you know, been secured down and all five lug nuts are on these cars. You know, NASCAR is also looking at things such as the toe alignments on these cars. Every race has a maximum tolerance of the toe and camber. And what they're really looking at is the toe alignment on these cars to get around the track, turn left, turn right, whatever the case may be, which particular track that they're at. You know, one of the biggest things is that when this unencumbered, rule came down from NASCAR that basically, you know, went across multiple different facets of the rule book, there was a lot of discussion on this. There was problems within the laser inspection station. There was, a lot of questions on it from the teams, the drivers, the builders, the car owners, everybody really involved. And NASCAR did come back and they did amend this, where basically, you know, these are the most egregious rule book violations that you can look at. Usually, typically P4s, P5s, and P6s, 1, 2, and 3 are typically your very, very minimal, nothing that would enhance the race car by any means. These are the most egregious of them all, and this is what NASCAR is really looking for. And when they made that modification and they said that, you know, we're not going to look at 1, 2, and 3 necessarily as an unencumbered finish, but you're still going to be penalized some way, somehow, of course. What we're looking at is P4, 5, and 6 penalty in the rule book, and they also changed it where they basically said that everybody that is in the chase will go through the laser inspection station regardless of where they finish at and regardless of if they win or not. So So, you know, these are just things that, that NASCAR has done with this policy in the rule book.
Okay. And Stephen, to sort of help me, you know, sort of clarify everything here. All this come about after Martin Truex won his race and he failed. Did he fail the post race laser inspection, Stephen? I can't remember. Or was it, I mean, I can't remember that far back. So what
this came out, the unencumbered finishes really came out prior to that, but the change in the unencumbered finish was after Martin Truex Jr. going to Chicagoland, and he failed the laser, the lakes inspection by just, you know, a fraction, you know, a tenth of an inch or so. And that's what NASCAR and everybody had to go back, and they had to wonder if, you know, failing one of the measurements by one, you know, tenth of 1/100th of an inch, whatever it was, I'd have to look back and see what the actual offset measurement was. But, you know, NASCAR, Steve O'Donnell and everybody, they put their heads together and said, okay, you know, there's some obvious tolerances in these cars that, you know, what most people don't know is that you don't roll directly into the list inspection after the race. Your car is given time to settle, typically anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, potentially longer, depending on how long it takes you to get to the list inspection and begin the process. So NASCAR doesn't take them directly off the track and just put them to the list inspection, because almost everybody would fail at that point, being 400 or 500 or 600 miles worth of racing put underneath of them. So they give them the time to, you know, basically work themselves back up to where they should be at when they're not under the race condition. So that's why there is the time between the end of the race and the actual list inspection, which is typically 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes after that. And then, you know, when Martin Truex Jr. won and he was off, you know, NASCAR really did just go back and say, okay, this isn't, he really had a low level penalty, something that, as I said, is not an egregious P4, P5, P6. And NASCAR made, you know, there was even more questions after that than there were really answers. And that's where Steve O'Donnell and NASCAR and everybody really came together and said, okay, we've got to make one more slight change to make sure that we're only, you know, taking things away from people that are doing something that would enhance the race car to on the racetrack. And that's why you see the unencumbered spelled out in the rule book as it is currently.
Okay. So, like you said, Stephen, they raise the P1, P2, or P3, whatever, up to P4 and P5. So, in the future, going through the chase, and, you know, it could change next year, you know, whatever Steve O'Donnell and everybody there at NASCAR decides to do, basically they're not going to take the win away from the driver, but they're going to put the P4 penalty up to where it's going to take the points or what have you from that driver to advance into the next round of the chase. Am I right, Stephen? Am I sort of thinking right? Am I reading it right?
Yeah, it basically, if you win, even if you get an encumbered finish under a P4, P5, or P6, you're going to be penalized, but you're also going to lose that eligibility, that automatic bid eligibility into the next round. So
right.
not only are you, you know, losing out, you still win the race. You're officially credited with the race, but you lose that automatic bid that would be given to you for that race win, as well as points and fines that, you know, will put you even further down in the point standing once it's all over with.
Thank you very much. Big shout out to Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. He has put rule 12.10 incumbent race finishes into that. Thank you, Stephen. Maybe everybody around here in Talladega listen. Maybe all of our other listeners listen too, Stephen. I wanted to get it straight from you to make sure I was thinking correct. But that is the way Rule 12.10 in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series rulebook, encumbered race finishes, has come down, and Stephen simplified. Stephen, you're awesome, bud. Throw that paperwork over to the side. Throw that paperwork over to the side. Stephen, big announcement. Breaking. Wait a minute, where's my breaking news button? Here we go. Well, here's my 1960s breaking news button. Stephen, don't like. Saturday, this coming Saturday, October 15th, the Pit Stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson will be live from the Ken Patterson Media Center at Talladega Super Speedway. Just let everybody know, coming up, it's 11 Eastern, 10 Central. At 11:10 Eastern time, we will have Public Relations Director Russell Branham will come sit down and join us. And at the bottom of the hour, Daytona 500 Champion Crew Chief and NASCAR on Fox analyst Mr. Lambert Reynolds will be joining us. And at some point in time, Grant Enfinger will be joining us also. He will be racing the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series race there at Talladega Super Speedway. So everybody mark your calendars. This coming Saturday, we will be live from the Ken Patterson Media Center in the infield at Talladega Super Speedway. The Pit Stop with Tennis Fanning, Stephen Wilson, and my darling wife, Suzanne. She will be answering the phones and everything. And, Stephen, before we let everybody go, do you have – I know, like you mentioned earlier, the National Camper World Truck Series, they're off this weekend. But the Sprint Cup and the Xfinity Series are at Kansas. I'm looking for my paperwork, or do you have it up?
Yeah, I got it up. Xfinity Series starts at round of 8. It's going to start this weekend in Kansas. The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series to be out there for Hollywood Casino 400. Everything's really kicking off out there on, oh, and the ARCA Series. ARCA Series championship race is also this weekend. Will be run Friday night. So, you know, anybody out in that area been following ARCA, they're going to close out their season this weekend in Kansas. You've got NASCAR Sprint Cup Series qualifying at Friday at 6:15 Eastern Standard Time, to be immediately followed at around 8:30 p.m. with ARCA Series presented by Menards, championship race out there, 100 laps, 150 miles for those guys going out there chasing that championship. You then come back over there to Saturday. NASCAR Xfinity Series qualifying coming up at 12 o'clock with the NASCAR Xfinity Series Kansas Lottery 300, 3 p.m., 200 laps, 300 miles out there. And to top it all off, Sunday afternoon, 2:15 Eastern time, NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, Hollywood Casino 400, Kansas Speedway, 267 laps, 400.5 miles out there for them to halfway through this round of 12. And halfway through the chase.
Yeah, but it's gone quick. 2016 and it's going by quick. And, Stephen, I'm glad you brought up the ARCA race to sort of touch on my announcement earlier. Grant Enfinger will be flying back from Kansas that Saturday morning, so he don't know exactly what time he's going to come on. He's going to text me, so that might be a late time. But, Stephen, I will let you know. And also, Johnny Hurst, maintenance supervisor, he don't know if he's going to be able to come in and sit down, you know, because that's the weekend before the race, so he's probably busy. But we've had Johnny on before when we've done a live show from Kid Fire Smasher. But to just let everybody know, Johnny Hurst is possible. Grant Enfinger is coming on. He don't know when he's going to come on, so it might be late, Stephen, just to clarify that.
Big show all lined up for Saturday.
Yeah, it's gonna be a big show, sir. And I want to get – I think we had Johnny on – might not have been last year, year before, but I know we had Johnny Hurst on. He got this new lawnmower deal, bud. I think he talked about it last a couple of years ago. And I'm probably barking up the tree that I've always barked up. But back in the day when I was in high school, we used to work out there in the summertime, and we had to weed eat outside of the banks in turn one and two and turn three and four. But now he's got this remote control lawnmower, Stephen. You got to see this. I mean, it sort of sits low, and he's got this remote control. He stands up on the asphalt up there around the turns, and he runs this lawnmower up and down the bank, so there's no more weedy. I want to get him on to talk about that. That is freaking awesome, bud.
Maybe they'll put you to work, make you go out there and weed eat or something while you're out there. You don't hang around there too long.
I'm not, because you know how Russell is. You've met Russell. Russell will jump you up one side and down the other, won't he?
Well, he'll put you to work out there. So you hang around there too long, you're going to be put to work volunteer out there.
I know it. We better go ahead and do the show and get out of there. Stephen, I want to thank you very much. And just let everybody know again, Tune in Saturday morning. We're going to be live from the Kenan Patterson Media Center in the infield at Talladega Super Speedway. And, Stephen, let everybody know if they can follow you on social media and your website, bud. You got the floor now.
Follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest, SpeedwayDigest.com. Brett Winningham and Katie will be out at Kansas Speedway all weekend long, covering all the ARCA Xfinity and Sprint Cup Series for us. Caleb's going to come down there, hang out with you in Talladega, and then he's going to go to Martinsville, too. So next 3 weeks, a lot of content coming out there on the site. So make sure you check it all out.
It's going to be awesome, Stephen. Tell Caleb to look. Suzanne and I, we will be there. And, again, thanks for tuning in. And, Stephen, tell AM and the boys we said hello. And from now, we're going to say good night from Dega Nation. We will talk to you Saturday morning from the Kenan Patterson Media Center, live from Talladega Super Speedway. I'm Tim Spain, alongside my good friend, CEO of Speedway Digest, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Until Saturday, good night.
Pasadena, where you at? Yeah, Inglewood, Inglewood, always up to no good. Even Hollywood, trying to get a piece, baby. Sacramento, Sacramento, where you at?
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The chase for the NASCAR Spring Cup returns October 21st through 23rd. Call 1-877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.